This episode of the Inside Transportation Podcast is sponsored by Ford Motor Company, built on the belief that freedom of movement drives human progress, from connectivity to autonomy, AI to machine learning. Ford has one simple goal: to improve mobility for its customers. To learn more about Ford's work in mobility, autonomous vehicles, and their global efforts to improve mobility for its customers, visit corporate.ford.com. That's corporate.ford.com. The Inside Transportation Podcast is also sponsored by the law firm of Fenwick & West. Fenwick & West is one of the world's first and leading law firms dedicated to technology and transportation. Learn more about how Fenwick can help companies tackle the complex legal and business issues of autonomous transportation at Fenwick.com. That's F-E-N-W-I-C-K.com. Now, on to the show. Hello and welcome to the Inside Transportation Podcast, a production of Inside.com. This is our weekly podcast where we discuss transportation trends that you need to know about to stay ahead of the curve. My name is Johan Marino, and I'm the writer of the Inside Transportation and Inside Electric Vehicles newsletters. And I am joined here by angel investor, podcaster, and Inside.com CEO, Jason Calcanis. What's going on, my friend?
Not much. Living life under pandemic. It's just, I couldn't tell you what month it is, couldn't tell you what day of the week it is. It's just one day after the next.
Well, I heard it's Tuesday, April 13th, 2025. And we're here recording our podcast today with our two very special guests. I'm very excited for this one. We often talk about the future of transportation being centered around automated and autonomous driving technology, but we seldom think about what that type of transportation is going to be like when it rolls out. Who's going to own the experience? Who's going to have access to that data? And most importantly, who's going to own that data? On this week's episode, we sit down with Jim Koenig and Jim Gregoire. They have the same names, yes, folks, of Fenwick & West. They are two experts on privacy, especially when it comes to connected and autonomous vehicles. Since Jim and Jim have the same names, we will be identifying Jim Koenig as Jim K and Jim Gregoire as Jim G. Well, thank you for joining us here on the podcast, guys.
Yeah, pleasure to be here.
Great to be here.
And for background, you both work in self-driving transportation and helping startups and big companies deal with the regulatory framework for transportation, correct?
The regulatory, privacy, but as well as security. We have a number of security people from industry and data and data analytics as part of our group too. So we actually have a very unique industry legal and technical team.
Got it. And some of the big names you work with include, as we know, Tesla, Waymo, et cetera, or have worked with. Basically everybody. I mean, when you have an industry practice like this, you specialize. How many years have you specialized in this specific space, transportation?
I've been in transportation and help advising companies for over 20 years. Mm. From one of the big four auto manufacturers and their cyber program when they were first hacked, to start up autonomous vehicle and connected car companies. And Jim used to have his own separate business. Jim?
Yeah, I'd say about 20 years for me as well. It started when I was in college, started working for an airport authority in D.C., the Metro Washington Airports Authority, and have been a transportation geek ever since then. Did about 5 years of infrastructure consulting, helping public agencies and cities figure out how to finance public use infrastructure such as toll roads, multimodal transit centers, and airports.
And would you say, just kicking it off here before we get into the week's news, the last 2 years, 3 years, in terms of the velocity of innovation and startups, was greater than the last decade or two?
Agreed. I think that there's a perfect storm that's here now that's intermixing the Internet of Things, sensors, machine learning, and low cost but super high power processing power to put technologies in our cars, unlike anything that's ever been seen before, which is significantly accelerate the progress and the promise of autonomous and connected vehicles, but also the risks and the potential downside.
All right. Well, let's get into it, Johan. What's on the docket today?
Right. Yes. Well, one thing I did want to discuss, so you mentioned that you work with a lot of clients that are currently developing autonomous vehicle projects. As of today, July 28th, we still don't have a company that's fully deployed a level 5 autonomous driving solution on a public road. A lot of the focus right now, I'm sure, is just on perfecting the technology and getting it past regulators. But how much of this conversation have both of you observed, and feel free to whoever wants to knock this one out first, has been centered around the user experience with autonomous vehicles? And what I mean by that is the actual practice of riding inside of an autonomous vehicle versus just the technology end of things.
I think
Go ahead, Jim.
G.
No, I was going to just say, I think from my perspective, in many respects, the user experience is the easy part, because there are far fewer variables for these companies to solve for. You know, people generally like the same things. They want to have, you know, a nice infotainment system. They want to be comfortable in their seats. They want to have space. And of course, they want to be safe. All that's easy, but it's the outside world that presents a lot more of the unknown, the unpredictable events, especially when you're trying to combine cars that are driven by these, you know, computers, essentially supercomputers built into them, with all of the other cars driven by humans still, who, as we all know, are incredibly unpredictable and unreliable in many cases.
And I think for autonomous and connected cars to reach their full potential and value, it will actually take that consumer experience, but there's going to be a couple domino steps before. I think that first, driven by economics, autonomous driving trucking and delivery and transportation that's in the middle of the night, that's much safer and that has a significant economic benefit to it, potentially can be first. Individuals will watch that, and as we continue, have a safety record built by some of that type of transportation, then consumers might be a little more receptive for trial and use of autonomous vehicles and connected cars for the safety benefit. Now it's hard, you know, the natural instinct of an individual to feel safe and in control is to grab the wheel. But to be able to say subconsciously and rewire years of individual thinking, I'm actually safer if I remove my hands from the vehicle. And it may not be today's iteration of the car and safety driving, but it may eventually be where the roads are completely automated. And you get in your car, you sell the destination, and now every car on the road senses where the car in front or behind it happens to be, or actually drives, you know, and plans out the best road for everybody and solves for everybody on the road. That's much farther out.
Maybe we need to give people one of those dummy wheels like they have in the driver's ed cars.
For toddlers in the back who can smack the horn. How much of the challenge do you perceive will be the early safety track record of this technology? Obviously, we tragically had the Uber accident. Full disclosure, I'm still a shareholder in the company. And we recently had a moped company, basically a Vespa scooter type company in New York, have a series of accidents over the last 2 weeks, a death and maybe 25 assorted accidents in New York. And they basically paused service in New York. And Johan and I were talking about VTOLs and, you know, how those are also going to need to have a lot of testing. How do you, when without talking about a specific client, maybe Jim Kay, you could talk about how do clients you work with look at the public perception of these technologies, which, you know, may not correlate with, maybe emotional and not correlate with reality, right? They may be in fact safer, but you just could have bad luck to have two accidents in a row. We were talking about the Pan Am helicopter that the strut broke, and that was the end of helicopters in New York City going off the top of buildings. So what are your thoughts just generally and your advice when you talk to clients?
The safety record is critically important. That being said, to be able to tell a story about one vehicle and one accident compared to how many other accidents are caused by humans as a percentage, that's the type of statistics and getting to the numbers. Making sure that consumers have confidence in their vehicles is really important. It's a constant theme that people with change, they're always concerned and slow for change. They're wary, they're concerned about the gadgets. I mean, here are some quotes that I recently read about cars. And it said, like it or not, the robots are slowly taking over the driver's chores. And then there's another one that said these new vehicles are cheating humans out of the experience of driving a vehicle. And now, these sound contemporary, but they're actually from quotes that criticized in 1958 Chrysler's new feature, the autopilot. And the autopilot was the first actually known cruise control. And all it did was control the speed in the car.
Right.
So now when you talk about having humans let the, you know, and now here we are sitting 62 years later. Those same comments you thought almost fell into talking about autonomous vehicles. And all we've really done is really still take our hands off the wheel as the car slows down and speeds up and may switch lanes, right? So I think that the safety record's really important, but human perception, building confidence, and letting humans try the vehicles. And with trying, then it will come. But observing the trucks, getting safety records that will inspire. I don't want to be sitting here 20 years from now reading these same comments about autonomous vehicles.
Right. So one thing I was going to say, there was research from ARC Research, which is like an analyst firm. They estimate that Tesla can get their autonomous ride-hailing service down to about $1 a mile. By comparison, Uber right now is about $2.15 per mile. Elon has said, you know, we can probably bring it down to under 25 cents. So I guess my question to you, Jim G., is, will any passengers own any of the driving experience in the future based on your conversations you've had with clients or what you're kind of projecting? Is there going to be any personal vehicle ownership in like 20 years?
Yeah, I do. I tend to be perhaps more skeptical than the typical transportation geek in this respect. I think a lot of the potential for autonomous vehicles is a bit overhyped. As we all know, you know, Elon is no stranger to grandiose statements, and I'll tread lightly here, given that Elon is one of our favorite clients. He's ambitious.
He sets aggressive targets, and, you know, and he hits them sometimes a year later, but, you know, he hits them.
Exactly. No, you really do have to hand it to him, and I'm a huge Elon and Tesla fan. But I do think, with respect to people owning cars, I think the answer is yes for a few reasons. One, you're going to have people who love driving who are going to fight this change with everything they've got. They want to be in control of the vehicle. They enjoy driving, the act of driving. It's not about getting from A to B. It is about the thrill of driving. And so they're never going to want to buy an autonomous vehicle unless they are actually mandated to do so by regulation. And we can talk about regulation in a minute. But another reason is that I think people will own cars if for no other reason than as a source of income. You know, we've heard about these ride sharing services, especially Teslas in particular, people making money from their cars while they sit at home. They send their car out to do the work. Right. Now, I'll spare you my thoughts on whether that's going to create an even lazier society, but I worry a little bit about that.
Well, like as Elon said, the Tesla vehicles will be the only vehicles that actually appreciate in value over the next 5 years. So we'll see.
Yeah. So
in full disclosure, Jim and I both own Teslas.
And singular, because I own four. You guys really own just one each? How do you
give them the rundown,
Jason?
How do
you guys survive with only one Tesla? Oh,
it's rough,
brutal.
But we make do. Yeah,
I'm actually taking. Yeah, go ahead.
We're waiting for the Cybertruck and the new Roadster.
Yeah, so I have a first world problem, which is the first two are collector's editions. I have the 16th of the Roadster and the signature number one of the Model S. And I'm actually having, I think I'm going to have Rally Road, which is this auctioning site where you can buy like fractional shares in like an item, actually auction them off and put them in a museum somewhere because I want to get the Cybertruck and I want to get the Roadster too, but I have no more garage space. All right, we have to throw to a quick break. Johan, what's coming up after the break?
Yes, yes. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about affiliated consent, what? Which is an idea that Jim Kay has for us.
Affiliated consent.
Yes, it's an innovative approach that balances okay. privacy and convenience. And this has a lot to do with connected and autonomous vehicles. And we're going to discuss more about that when we come back on the Inside Transportation Podcast. Stay tuned.
Hey, everybody, just want to let you know that this episode of Inside Transportation is sponsored by our friends at the Ford Motor Company, built on the belief that freedom of movement drives human progress from connectivity to autonomy. Ford has one simple goal, and that's to improve the mobility of its customers. Ford has been using technology to shape the future of transportation for over 100 years and is dedicated to solving the world's most pressing mobility issues. What you might not know is that Ford has a series of divisions that make these visions a reality. Ford X is Ford's venture incubator that unites entrepreneurs, designers, and engineers to shape the future of transportation. Ford's City Innovations team brings innovative ideas to life through community workshops, crowdsourcing initiatives, and citywide mobility challenges. And Spin, a property of Ford, brings e-scooter sharing to cities and college campuses. So here's your call to action. To learn more about Ford's work in mobility, autonomous vehicles, and their global efforts to improve mobility for its customers, visit corporate.ford.com. That's corporate.ford.com. Thanks again to Ford for sponsoring independent media like this podcast.
And we're back here on the Inside Transportation Podcast, Johan Marino, Jason Calcanis, and we are joined with two very special guests, Jim Koenig and Jim Gregoire from Fenwick and West. And before the break, we were talking a little bit about autonomous vehicles, ride hailing, all over the, we're going all over the place a little bit. But something that's kind of interesting about Jim Kay. So we are actually going to put a video in the show notes of Jim Kay's recent TED Talk, where he discusses this idea of affiliated consent. Now, there's kind of this idea where with autonomous vehicles, you're going to be able to create a whole experience out of something, right? But I'm going to let Jim Kay explain it a little bit. Why is there a need for affiliated consent? Kind of give some of our listeners some background on this idea, and we can discuss a little bit more. But yes, this idea of affiliated consent, so interesting. I just want to learn more.
Well, ultimately, as a lot of autonomous vehicles, machine learning relies on artificial intelligence and machine learning that's making hundreds, if not thousands, of decisions as you drive down the road. Ultimately, too many decisions for the current consent model, it's too heavy. So ultimately, every time for communication, when you are 50, 100 miles away from home, you don't know the restaurants that fit your taste near you. You don't necessarily know which gas stations are the ones that have a better experience or maybe, you know, lower gas prices without reaching out. And every time you reach out, it may present offers or different interactions with you as you travel down the road. So ultimately, the thought was, if the current consent model is too heavy, how do we actually increase the consumer experience by creating a curated series of experiences based on decisions to a third party to whom you entrust? Now, do you entrust your decision-making to your auto manufacturer? Maybe Mercedes or maybe Tesla knows every place we go and can sum together the types of experiences that we like. Maybe Hilton Hotels, that's the type of brand that matches the type of luxury and that fits our needs. And ultimately, as you're driving down the road in a new city and you have your Hilton Hotel reservation, they actually are providing sightseeing details and things that fit your interests as you drive through, turn by turn, through the city. Maybe it's not that.
But just to clarify this idea, right? Let's say I have an autonomous car and it's a Tesla, right? And this idea is basically me as a consumer, instead of individually accepting the terms and conditions or accepting, you know, the fact that I'm going to be sharing my car's data with all these individual companies. For instance, I can say, okay, Hilton Hotels, I trust you. I know that I trust your brand, and I know that you know my tastes, or you observe my tastes. So I'm going to let you take the wheel, literally, in choosing my whole experience, right? So I'll have my car drive me to the Hilton Hotel in Palm Springs. It'll pick out the restaurants. It'll pick out, you know, where I should be traveling. It'll pick out like a local yoga studio if I want to take a class. Is that kind of the idea you're suggesting, just to clarify?
Yeah, just to make it simple, rather than you having to individually find and get consent models and trust whether they're all going to overmarket you after you reach out to 100 mm-hmm. places you visit on a vacation, you may turn it over to Hilton, who's going to find all of the restaurants, the sightseeing adventures, the car rental, or whatever it happens to be for your experiences when you're in a particular place. You would trust one company. And if you don't like their choices, or any of the vendors aren't the right experience, or they overmarket you or overcommunicate you, you say, okay, great. You are now, I'm unselecting you and all of your vendors. I'm going to turn to another company. Maybe now I turn to Disney, and Disney wants to bring to me all of the ESPN sports radio and Disney children's.
I like this idea.
Happens things.
Jason, any thoughts? It's really, affiliated consent is really interesting, because what you're trying to do is make better decisions with less pain and suffering, right? So you want it to be easier to get what you want. And if you look at something like Amazon, they actually do this like two ways. When you do a search for like a cable, they're like, or a microphone, they're like, this is the Amazon choice, I think they call it. And they put that little chiclet there, right?
Yes.
So you know that that's like a high-end one. When I go to a new city, or when we used to travel on airplanes and go to new cities back in the day, when I got speaking gigs, I would always train my assistant at the time and say, this is how to find the greatest restaurants in a city. Number one, you go to like this website, Eater, you go to Yelp, you find the 4-star ones, then you look for the local publications, you find out who the food critic is there. And I would have my assistant do, you know, maybe 2 hours of research, and then find to me the consensus of what the hot new restaurants were and what the classic great restaurants were, make a list of those top 5 or 10 with the links in it. And then I would say, okay, get me reservations. I'm going to be in Tokyo. I'm going to be in Sydney for 5 nights. I want to go to Quay. I want to go to Tetsuya, you know, and it could be Michelin star places, or it could be the other places. And what I like about this is you could either trust a brand, or there could be new brands that do this for you, that have all of your data, have your goals, and you pay them to do it. So it's not even for the commission, but like a third party, like the Zagat Guide used to exist. You could create a new company that does this affiliated consent. They have all the data off your phone, and they just do it anonymously, right? And they just give you what you want anonymously.
So there might be an opportunity for new businesses to spring out of this, right, Jason?
I'm having startup ideas, yeah.
Whoa,
I'm having
there you
startup
go.
Ideas, yeah.
All right, call me after the podcast. I've Absolutely. Had this idea of percolating for a while.
So, Jim Kay, I guess the question I have is, what's the consumer reaction to this type of idea, right? Because I feel like, you know, we always have, like, I always hear people complaining about being overmarketed, or, you know, seeing all these recommendations on their ads. I mean, it seems like Americans specifically take their privacy very seriously, right? So what's going to be the work that needs to be done in order to enact this type of program, right? Is it just going to be promoting the convenience factor? Is that what's mainly going to be driving this?
Well, I think ultimately with many changes that are happening out there, the most conservative consumers for privacy, they don't have to sign up for any of it. They're going to have to find all 100 places on their own, or hire a travel agent or somebody else, a manual form of that on their vacation. That being said, for those who are in the middle, who are willing to stick their toe in and try this, now, instead of going to a website and searching for airline tickets, and then they're going to drop a cookie on their browser, so for the next 9 months, they're going to get pop-up ads saying, hey, buy tickets to Jamaica. Buy tickets to Jamaica, which you bought tickets 9 months ago. Now you're going to go to one site, and instead of every company screaming out to try and meet you, because now there's a piece of data out there in the ad tech environment that says you're going to Jamaica. They don't know when, so they're all yelling at you for attention. Now your first tip in the water, whether it's your Hilton Hotel or United Airlines, they may be your electronic and digital concierge. They're going to create these curated experiences. And so those companies, rather than yelling at you, the consumer, they want to meet B2B company who now own the affiliated consents. You'll actually get more discipline, email, text messaging, and other marketing, because a lot more of it is going to be driven through coherent, rational channels.
And if I could add one thing, I think in many ways, this is an idea that, like most good ideas, is solving a problem that people don't know they have yet. And this problem is getting worse because you have privacy advocates who are saying, yeah, I want more regulation. Bring it on. I want to copy the Europeans. So we've got the CCPA now in California. CPRA is coming. So everybody's starting to get more and more privacy awareness. And what does that mean? You're getting asked, do you want to share your data? Is it okay if we serve you this cookie? You know, set your privacy preferences. So I think, Johan, I think it was your question. It's not just a matter of convenience of not having to think about where do I go eat my dinner and where do I stay. It's the avoidance of annoyance of all these perpetual pop-ups and having to grant permission over and over and over.
Yeah, what's really interesting too, I think, about this is who owns that data in your car? Who owns the black box? And I think people are starting to get ahead of this idea. I know Tesla provides, if you go to tesla.com/support/privacy, you can actually export all the data that Tesla has on your vehicle. And then, of course, you know, when there is an accident, this data from all of these smart cars and all of these sensors is available to law enforcement. Is that correct? Putting aside Tesla specifically in that case, but any car that has a black box in it, that data is something that law enforcement can get access to, correct?
That's a different issue. That's a state and different country issue about what's available to law enforcement from the cameras. Yeah. But the idea that the Europeans created, you having the ability and control to download your data, that's different than who owns that data. But ultimately now you're interacting with fewer people.
Right.
So now you just say, hey, on that trip to Jamaica, I only interacted with this one brand. And I'm hearing from this noise from all sorts of other people, hey, I'm no longer going to allow you to be my concierge. I'm switching. And frankly, individuals have control over this. And maybe you have multiple concierges for different things. You have one for kid content, one for content in the vehicle. You know, maybe you have an entire experience, but I want to sign up for the Calcanis cooking restaurant reviews, you know, wherever I go. So but just the idea of trusting a third party for a series of decisions, not just the one decision that you consent to now, that's the simple idea. That's the disrupting idea that allows trusted third parties to make decisions for you within a limited, safe range and sphere of experience. And you always have the right to remove that. You know?
Yeah, I know. It's super cool.
So
what about the data, though, in the black boxes of these things? Who owns the data from cars, and how is that framework evolving here in the United States?
A lot of it has to do with data that in the U.S., many times it can be the car manufacturer, and they have uses of it to whom they share, whether for safety, for advertising or other purposes. Many things you have to consent to in terms of that. But very often, the information generated is the car companies, but it's also integrated and supplemented with information from other parties. And frankly, right now, it's a little bit of the Wild West. They're inconsistent in these contracts between companies. And it's, if you don't get the ownership rights, you get a full license to it. And so it's, in effect, you get what you want. But right now, it's not universally one approach as to who owns the data.
That's something that needs regulation, right? There needs to be some standard on that eventually because, you know, as one famous developer said, like your data is my liability. Like in some cases, having all this data for a big company, if it did get hacked or it was compromised in some way and it had people's location or driving speed or driving habits, that would be really detrimental if some auto manufacturer, I'll just pick one that doesn't exist anymore, DeLorean. If DeLorean existed and you had like everywhere I drove in my DeLorean with my gullwing doors. And imagine that got hacked and like people could see like, oh, Jason was driving at 3 a.m. at 95 miles an hour down the 101. That is a made up example. I don't own a DeLorean. I don't speed. But allegedly. I mean, how do you, well, I mean, I did speed. I got 3 tickets on the 280 and then I put the speed regulator at 82 miles an hour on my Tesla. So it's literally impossible for me. When I hit like 75, alarms go off and it slows you down, which is the greatest feature ever. But in all seriousness, when you're talking to your, you know, partners, like, what is the advice on that? Because there hasn't been a breach that I know of car data. But boy, would that be really, really damaging for an auto manufacturer.
Look, Jim and my reputation, you know, while we are privacy experts, we're practical. We're not necessarily viewed as privacy advocates. So it's always really a balance. It's not the information, it's the uses. And so there's a balance in wanting to be able to give extreme privacy rights and keep data separate and small or limit liability. But at the other side, the more data you have, the more data you put into the data lake, the more accurate your machine learning is, the better your autonomous vehicle and safety happens to be, the better that it can predict the true things that you like, not just major things. Like hotel brands and dinners, all of a sudden you get nuances and all sorts of things the more data that you have. So it's really about making sure that you balance the information that's in there for the uses that they need, and that the sensitivity of the data also has a balance with the amount of security that you've invested into the system. You know, cars, to make sure it's safety, cars are going to be solid state and not have too many, you know, the controls around the car are not going to have the same number of entry points you know, as your telephone happens to have. It's going to be this. It's going to be much more similar to a plane, where they make it very, very impenetrable and have very few connections to the outside world to limit that security. And so that's the balance that has to be not regulated, hopefully industry-driven, or set by ISO standards. That talk about the security and safety and reliability of cars, that cars have to meet and be able to run literally thousands of miles to show that their entire intelligence systems comply with this, so the cars are safe for autonomous driving. And that's partly what's taking so long to get us to full autonomous, because they have to run multiple miles. Right. To show a system's correct. And if they make an adjustment, they got to restart the miles again.
Yes. So, Jim Kay, I have a question for you. And it's a question about the U.S. and China, right? Because we're getting into this conversation about, you know, autonomous vehicles. How is the rollout of autonomous vehicles going to differ between the U.S. and China? And you can answer that when we come back from break on the Inside Transportation Podcast. Stay tuned.
Hey, everybody. Let me take a moment to thank Fenwick and West. They're one of the world's first and leading law firms dedicated to technology and life sciences. They operate in the fast lane of innovation, where ideas often outpace changes in the law. That's where you find Fenwick's autonomous transportation and shared mobility practice, steering startups, technology giants, and major automotive companies through rapidly evolving legal, business, and regulatory challenges, which we talk about here on Inside Transportation all the time. A Silicon Valley original, Fenwick is a national law firm with offices in Mountain View, San Francisco, Seattle, New York, Santa Monica, and even Shanghai. So here's your call to action. Learn more about how Fenwick can help companies tackle the complex legal and business issues of autonomous transportation at fenwick.com. That's FENWICK.com. Thanks again to Fenwick for providing great legal services to me. I use them personally for our investments, and for supporting independent media like Inside Transportation. Let's get back to this amazing episode.
And we're back on the Inside Transportation Podcast. Before the break, I asked Jim Koenig from Fenwick and West about the rollout of autonomous vehicles in the U.S. versus what it's probably going to look like in China. Jim, do you have any thoughts there?
Sure. The rollout, pun intended, in China may actually be quick, because there the government can act unilaterally, move quickly, and there seems to be a significant appetite for technology and these types of things in cars. I mean, as you can see, some of the autonomous vehicles that are doing very well within China. And so I think there are not as many roadblocks. There are not as many, and the government significantly incentivized to encourage this thing because this isn't a U.S. invention. Mm-hmm. It's a global invention. And Jim G and I were talking earlier today that there are literally hundreds of autonomous vehicle companies, not parts manufacturers or just intelligence companies. And so there's a significant, you know, race within China for different types of vehicles and different competition. I mean, there definitely are some leaders that are, you know, in the vehicles, but there are very many companies that are focusing on this with government, financial, and regulatory and others.
So the government has an active role in the rollout of autonomous vehicles in China. Is that correct, based on what you've researched?
Yeah, from what we, you know, from our experience and what we know there, the government is supportive.
So what do you think, you know, just personally, what do you think the U.S. can do to kind of match up with China when it comes to that, right? Because at the moment, as we all know, there's not a lot of legislation. There's not a lot of work being done between automakers and, you know, developers of autonomous vehicles with the government. So what kind of, you know, things can be done to kind of match up with that participation from the Chinese government in the U.S.?
No, the U.S. government is doing a lot. I mean, there are tax incentives for purchasing the cars. Different cities and places can offer tax and other financial incentives for companies to build factories and different things in their locale. Working with government or quasi government groups, setting standards or like NIST standards for quality. It's clear what they are, and companies have to get to them. So no, the U.S. is doing a lot. Can there be more? Can there be a significant concerted investment in it? Sure. But I mean, currently with health and a couple of other things that are super priorities within the U.S. And globally, it's just a question of where that stands in terms of a priority. But ultimately, the safety on the roads is an incredible important priority. The enjoyment, the experience, the fun stuff that Jason, Jim G, and I enjoy out on the road. those would be less important and maybe less supported by government funding.
Right. Jim D, any thoughts?
What do you guys think of?
Oh, sorry.
Okay. No, I was going to say, what do you guys think of? We've been having this discussing, Johan and I, about like level 5 and when does it arrive? And, you know, most people who come on the pod and we talk to seem to think it's closer to 10 years from now, 7 to 10 when we'd have full autonomous. But, you know, the other question we'd like to think about is which comes first in America? VTOLs, vertical takeoff and landings, for people who are listening who haven't heard that term before. Those are like quadcopters that you can put a human in. Or like a drone you can put a human in. And we see a bunch of those, Kitty Hawk, et cetera. I don't know if you're working with any of those clients or customers in that space, but they're really working on it heavily in China as well. Which do you think we'll have first? A VTOL service, like, you know, going across the Grand Canyon or across the bay here, going, you know, Alcatraz Island, whatever, sightseeing for consumers. Or the level 5, hey, there's no steering wheel and I can drive to work in a major city, whichever one it happens to be. It could be Austin, it could be San Diego, whatever. Without a steering wheel. Which one of those do you think will come first? Jim G.
I listened to, I know you guys asked John McNellis this on your last podcast. It was an interesting discussion. And I agree with, I think you all were saying VTOLs. I agree, although I would probably rarely think of those two together just because they're so different in their application and the number of people that I think can take advantage of those. You know, right? VTOLs is going to be a much smaller audience at any one given time. Whereas if you develop a truly autonomous vehicle, level 5, that could get rolled out to the masses, you're going to be really changing society in grand scale. Although I have to say, if you're, you know, intent on driving to work without a steering wheel, it's called public transportation. You should just get on board.
Wait, what is this? I haven't heard. Is this company raising money? Publictransportation.co or .com? Are they raising? Yeah, that a
probably,
Y Combinator?
They should be raising money. I don't think they've got any. But
we'll send you the subscription agreement.
Yeah, absolutely, but I'm in.
It's funny because when you ask about the timing of, you know, level five, I feel like the answer is, you know, yeah, maybe it's 10 years, maybe it's 8 in an aggressive, but I feel like the years go by, but that answer doesn't change, right? The number doesn't get
so
smaller.
Weird.
And
yeah.
I had a conversation with one of my college roommates, which must have been about 8 or 10 years ago now. And he was, you know, just adamant that by 2020, we were going to have self-driving cars. And I said, there is no way that is happening. And this actually reminds me, I think he owes me money and I'm going to text
check
him after
the logs.
This podcast.
You got to go back into your Yahoo Messenger to find that thread.
Exactly.
You guys betting dinner on it. What do you say, JK? What do you got? What do you got? Vetoes or level five, which comes first as described in the bet?
Yeah, I would go with VTOLs because they'd be just be very limited, you know, uses and areas and things for that. The autonomous vehicles and five, I think with Jim, it's always, you know, just like the price of the perfect you know, laptop is always like $5,000, no matter how much technology you put in it. You know, as technology advances, things get less expensive. It's always 15 years away. So no matter where, you know, the last 10 years, I've always heard, oh, in 15 years, in 15 years. Well, I still think there is time for autonomous, but I do think that we will have some limited self-driving commercial vehicles and earlier. And if those go well and have a good safety record, I think some of the fascination recently, both with not just with autonomous vehicles, but in this pandemic area, there are a lot of millennials now who are day trading
right.
the Tesla stock. Yes. And so yeah. they may just start experimenting with the vehicle. And since they don't do advertising, you know, it doesn't have the same spread across America. And I think, you know, there might be some opportunities to accelerate.
The good news is all those millennials who bought Tesla on Robinhood, they now can afford to buy 2 Cybertrucks. So congratulations, millennials, you're doing it right. When will people be able to, Jim G, be in a car, let's say a Tesla, whatever, autopilot, and be able to, you know, do something for 5 or 10 seconds without looking at the road, or, you know, maybe a minute or something like that, that sort of be prepared to take over, which I think is level four definition. When do you think we hit that? Because that to me seems like a huge game changer. And here's a stupid idea that I've had for a long time, which is, would it be great if all self-driving cars were in a certain lane, say the right, the left, whatever, and there was some indicator, like brake lights, that you were on self-driving mode? And if you did that, then you could say, hey, left hand goes to all these self-driving cars. They, you know, when you're on certain highways, 280, 101, whatever, and it has the self-driving light is on, you know, so you have this little robot or computer light that goes where the BMW logo typically goes or whatever on the trunk of every car that says, hey, this is in self-driving mode. What do you think of that idea? And when we'll be able to, you know, just take 30 seconds off from looking at the road to read a text and reply?
Well, I guess putting aside the people who have taken it upon themselves to fall asleep while driving in a Tesla now, because the answer for them would be, oh, that was like last night. Yeah. you know, responsibly, I would say the answer is probably not that far off. Mm. I do think that, you know, arguably you can get away with, and I'm not condoning this, but you could get away with reading a text message while you're on autopilot on the highway. So for that to be legal and, you know, pretty safe, I would say that's probably the next year or two, is my guess. I think Tesla's saying end of year for their quote full self-driving. You know, I'm skeptical about that, but I really don't think it's that far off. I think to your point on, you know, a separate lane, my work in infrastructure has shown me that if you really want something to be effective, you have to do a lot more than you think you would have to. So it's not just going to be enough to have these autonomous vehicles identified as autonomous and driving at the moment autonomously. You need to have a walled off lane, kind of like you have an express lane on many of the highways and freeways around the country, where you can only enter if you have a certain transponder. Then once you're in there, I think because you're only going to allow certain vehicles and those are completely autonomous, they can drive 20, 30, 40 miles an hour faster than every other car who's not in that lane.
Ooh. So a new speed limit for self-driving if you have the transponder, and you could even be a shorter, right? You could, the distance between the cars could be shorter.
Exactly. And no traffic jams, of course, because they'll be talking to each other.
But ultimately, if there's also a better safety record, now you have lower insurance for those folks that are in there. And ultimately, you may start experimenting with not just the transponder to say that, hey, I have a vehicle that has these sensors that can sense the world around it, as opposed to potentially some other interface that connects to one common traffic safety grid. That this way that they're, that, you know, as opposed to all the Teslas knowing where each Tesla is on the road, now you have a car that knows where every other car is. And if the car in front of you stops short, that's already connected and communicates to your vehicle even before, you know, and faster and more accurately than maybe the cars with the current sensing technology. So there, once you start heading down that rabbit hole of savings and benefits and safety, insurance, potentially people having longer lives because there's less traffic fatalities from that lane. You know, there's different things that can
To tie back to that theme of security we were talking about earlier, I think one topic that needs a lot more exploration is the security of these public agencies and public infrastructure that they'll be building with which these autonomous vehicles will be communicating and sharing data on the fly as they're driving, right? Everybody's focused right now on the OEMs and the manufacturers and how secure are they and their software, but how about the third parties with whom they're sharing it? And I would, you know, I don't have any hard facts to back this up, but I would venture a guess that a lot of public agencies and municipalities are not going to have the same level of investment and security as a private company.
So, Jim G, one question, and then we'll wrap up today's show. One hypothetical issue with widespread numbers of connected cars is hacking, right? Some observers worry that connected and autonomous vehicles, when they're connected to a network, can be hacked for malicious purposes. So what's currently standing between legions of malicious hackers going into cars and breaking in? Is it because the current number of internet connected vehicles is so low? Or, I mean, like, give us some insight on, you know, the security of these vehicles and what's being, you know, done to kind of prevent hacking. Because in 2015, I'm sure you guys are all aware, two programmers were able to remotely hack into a Jeep, which was being operated by a Wired writer. And we'll put that article in the show notes. But any thoughts there?
Yeah, and I think Jason maybe mentioned this earlier in terms of you know, that security aspect of hacking in. Like, my personal thoughts are, I don't think there's the value in hacking an individual car and getting access to that individual's data, right? To Jason's example earlier about, oh, they were, you know, driving 80 something miles an hour and they went here at 3 a.m. or whatever. Who cares? I mean, what they're probably, the hackers are more focused on is getting access to the system where the data for all drivers is stored. And I think in many respects, that's going to be easier because, you know, you can do that through phishing a high level management employee at a manufacturer or even one of their suppliers and get yourself into the network and then navigate over to the mother load of data. That's far more worth their time than trying to hack an individual vehicle. And that may be why you haven't seen it yet.
Jim Kay, any thoughts there?
Sure. I mean, there's always the value of the data that sits at local municipalities. They're trying to get into the game and to help regulate and to help focus on, because they often can control their local roads and can set some of the rules. But meanwhile, local governments don't have the same monies and the same resources as a state, or better yet, a federal government have to be able to manage, control, and to secure that data. Meanwhile, also, every small municipality, there may be a much higher instance of somebody knows their cousin or somebody knows their friend who'll be able to manage the system. And now all of a sudden, county to county or city to city, you have interoperable technology that jives. So as you move from one place to another, there may be blackouts in the data, or there may be incompatibility. Having much larger government participation at the state and or federal level might be the best approach. Although a lot of the control in our constitution for the roadways and these types of things live with county and local municipalities. So there's still a lot of government questions to be sorted out by who's in the best position to help take out any roadblocks to autonomous vehicles and machine learning supported by the data that's going to be produced.
Right.
Yeah, and as we wrap here, just a quick question for each of you, as tight as you can, because I don't want to keep you. I know that the lawyers at your level get paid a lot of money to work with these companies. I don't know what we're going to
charge. They're going to start charging our credit cards after
But seriously, what is the singular topic in transportation that we're not talking about enough? The media, investors, society, what is the singular topic we should be really getting dialed into in the space?
Jim G?
I know it's a topic. Think it through. Or that we will be talking, another way to frame the same style of question is instead of not just what aren't we talking about, is what will we be talking about in 2 years?
I think for me, you know, regulation pops to mind, but I don't think it's the answer I want to go with. I think I want to go with companies don't seem to be collaborating and sharing as much knowledge with each other in this space as they perhaps could. And you know, it's probably for obvious reasons, right? They're each trying to be the first to really get out to market with a fully effective autonomous vehicle. But I think if they started sharing lessons learned or parts of their software or on the security and perhaps the privacy space to a lesser extent, it would be for the betterment of everybody and would perhaps advance a solution.
That's a great answer, Jim G. And I always think about that with open maps. I don't know if you remember, there was like a little bit of fighting Yelp and Google over maps and, you know, yep. Apple comes out with maps. And then somebody just said, you know what, we're going to create an open source open maps. I don't know why there's not an open database yet at scale for, you know, if three of the seven top, you know, people working in self-driving wanted to take the 3D models of the real world and real world data collected from cars and smartphones on the road and have an open source database about road information would be amazing. Jim Kay, what do you got? What are we not talking about now that we'll be talking about in 2 years?
Well, just on the sharing part, most auto manufacturers are developing their own machine learning around what to do with the pictures of someone walking into the road or not, or those decisions, the pictures from the car. If they pooled all that safety data, that would be incredible. But for me, what are we going to be talking about in 2 years that we're not talking about now?
Yeah.
What are people going to be doing, and how are they going to be spending their time in the car if the vehicle is taking over and driving? And the opportunities for both individuals and for media, self-improvement, and other tasks that you can do in the car that we haven't thought about yet are going to be significant, fun disruptors.
Yeah.
I love that idea, and I'm just going to say right now that we're going to have you guys lobby to change the tinting laws because some people are going to be doing activities that might require 100% tint. I'm just leaving it at that. I'm just saying, if it self-drives,
maybe all of a sudden,
tint the windows.
It's Jason, it's already being done.
That's true. Don't Google it, people. Don't Google
autonomous
it.
And anonymous. Autonomous and anonymous driving.
Yes, absolutely.
We're going to leave it at that. We're going to leave it at that. Well, thank you so much to our guests, Jim Koenig and Jim Gregoire of Fenwick & West. And you can learn more about Fenwick & West at fenwick.com. We'll have all that information in the show notes. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Good job.
And we will see you all next week. Take care.
All right, we'll see you down the road.
All right, well done. See you down the road, wherever.